As good pull quotes from theatre reviews go, they don't get much better than this from the New York Times. The most remarkable achievement in theatre, not only of this year, but also of the decade. That's what the Times said in 2010 of the original production of Gats by American theatre company Elevator Repair Service, which is bringing the show to the Adelaide Festival on the 13th, 14th and 15th of March. Now, all the performances start at 2 p.m. because the show runs for 8 hours and 30 minutes, including intervals. And it features, get this, every word of F. Scott Fitzgerald's novel, The Great Gatsby. And the day after the Adelaide performances of Gats, Gats director and founder of the Elevator Repair Service, John Collins, will talk about the genesis of Gats in the 16th Rex Cramphorn Memorial Lecture. But I'm very pleased to say that John also joins us now on Sunday Extra. Welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Now, John, a theatrical event featuring the full text of The Great Gatsby from start to finish. How on earth did that idea come about?
Well, it came about somewhat gradually, believe it or not. It took us a while to figure that out. We started off just with an interest in the book, and it was a long time ago. It was over 20 years ago now. But we just were interested in this book, and we loved the writing, and we thought there must be some kind of interesting theatrical experiment that we could conduct around this text. Now, we didn't think it was going to be what it turned out to be. We started out just tinkering with it, listening to some actors read some scenes and trying to figure out how we might edit them. And a thing we realized very early on was that this was not an easy book to edit down. In fact, it seemed to be kind of perfect, exactly like it was, even for theater, even for reading out loud. You know, it's got a first-person narrator, and everything sounded perfectly constructed as it was. So that's when it occurred to us that maybe the right kind of experiment, and we are an experimental theater company after all, maybe the right kind of experiment would be to just say all of it and see how that worked. Now, we didn't think that was going to work. We started that out as an experiment again to see where it would lead us, but didn't really think it would work to do the whole thing. And yet somehow it did.
Yes, and I think the we is very important there because it alludes, I think, to the established process that Elevator Repair Service goes through in creating original works. Could you speak a little to that more broadly?
Sure. Yeah, I use that we kind of unconsciously because it's just, you know, it has always been how we've made our work. As we make it as an ensemble. I am the director, but, you know, I'm more a director within the ensemble than of the ensemble in some ways. I mean, I don't mean to diminish my role too much, but we really do rely on the input of a group and the sort of collective impulses of this group of people who've worked together for a long time. So, for example, Scott Shepherd, who plays Nick, the narrator of the book, was hugely involved in the decision-making, and many other people have been as well. The entire ensemble, and there are 13 actors, are all involved and in the decision-making. And, you know, the company has evolved over time from when we first got the idea, but it's always been a group effort.
John, is Gats the first time that Elevator Repair Service had experimented with literary texts verbatim performed in the theatre?
The short answer to that is yes. I think we have worked with literature before, but this was the first time we thought to ourselves, you know, we're going to give ourselves the challenge of building a piece of theater around these exact words, where we did not allow ourselves to edit. We did not allow ourselves to rewrite it. And in some ways, you know, that gave us a huge hill to climb, but it also in other ways made it very easy for us, because we didn't have to worry about trying to improve upon the work of this great author. So that made it easy, I think.
And John, you talked about the collaborative process and that moment where you thought, oh, maybe this could work. I wondered if you could tell us in a little bit more detail, do you have a recollection of the first time you thought maybe this could work? And when did you actually know, oh, this is going to work?
Yeah, I mean, that initial impulse was just about giving ourselves a kind of, you know, ridiculous assignment. And that's a thing we always like to do. You know, we always like to give ourselves some kind of prompt, you know, some sort of task knowing that it might fail, we would choose something that might be, you know, crazy enough that it wouldn't actually work, but it would lead us somewhere. So that was kind of the first impulse. Well, here's a great impossible task to give ourselves. We started out with a sort of 30-minute version of it where we did a lot of skipping. And then we came back and said, all right, we're really going to try to do this all the way. We're really going to sincerely commit ourselves. And it wasn't until we had managed to, we were going through in order. I'm still thinking, we're going to hit a point where it gets too boring. We're going to hit a point where there's just too much prose, not enough drama. And when we got through chapter 4, I remember this, when we made our way about halfway through the book staging, and we still hadn't hit a place where I thought, nope, we can't do this part. We got to edit it. That's when I knew it was probably going to work. And I had people, we did a version of it then in a tiny little garage space in Brooklyn as a sort of work in progress, closed performance sort of thing for a small number of people. And some people who saw it then said, oh yeah, you've got something here. This is really going to work. So that's, I think that's what I really knew. You know, the show has had a very long history since then, and it's been performed all over the world. And, you know, so it was kind of a gradual dawning on us that, oh, we maybe have something special with this one.
I'm not sure if you've been tempted to perform other theatrical works involving novels start to finish since then. But what I was wondering is whether you've got an insight into what it is particularly about the writing of F. Scott Fitzgerald that might be conducive to this approach, or whether you think it's something that could be done out of any novel and just the limits of human endurance mean that you're not doing War and Peace.
Yeah. Well, a couple of things. We have definitely moved on to other great literary works since The Great Gatsby. We have not yet done another novel in its entirety. But what we did take away from the experience of working on The Great Gatsby was the value of working with the author's own words. So we've done 3 novels since, where we don't do the whole thing like we do with The Great Gatsby. We haven't taken on a short novel since then, but we have been sticking with the practice of using the author's words as they were written, even if we don't use them all. So we just, this past Sunday, finished a 7-week run of our adaptation of James Joyce's Ulysses. That's definitely not one we were going to be able to do every word. You'd need a lot of meal breaks for that. But we committed ourselves to choosing parts of that novel to present and using the language exactly as it was written. And, you know, that does 2 things for us. And we did it with The Sound and the Fury. We also did it with The Sun Also Rises. We've had a real fixation on early 20th century modernism. But doing that does 2 things. You know, one, it gives you an interesting theatrical challenge, and we love a challenge like that. We love something that gives us a problem to solve. So when the language is not written explicitly for the stage, then you have to figure out how to deal with the he saids and she saids and the narration and the inner thoughts and all that. It gives us a problem of form that we have to solve, and we like that. The other thing it does is it just means that you don't ever have the problem of an inferior replacement for the work of a great author. And so we can let the language sing just the way it does on the page.
On Sunday Extra, we're speaking with John Collins, who's the director and founder of Elevator Repair Service, which is bringing the production of GATS to the Adelaide Festival on the 13th to the 15th of March. Now, John, and I want you to be honest here, could you give me a sense of the range of responses that you've had from audiences to GATS? Because it's even promoted as a literary marathon. Now, speaking literally about marathons, I could not get to the end of an actual marathon, but how do audiences go with such a experimental but significant work?
Well, I think sort of perversely, one thing that the show benefits from is a skeptical audience. And I think, you know, it's not, you know, it's no mystery why an audience or various audience members might come in a little bit skeptical about what they're about to experience, because it seems like a huge commitment. And we ourselves were skeptical about that in the early days of mounting this show. We used to do it in 2 halves. because we were also afraid, like, oh, people just aren't going to be able to endure that. But the big takeaway from the audience responses that we've gotten over the years is that people who see it in a single sitting, I mean, with the dinner breaks and the intervals, are the ones who have the most transformative experiences. And it is, in fact, not in spite of, but because of the length and the commitment and the completeness of it, that people seem to have a great experience. You know, the so that's been, you know, very, very fortunately, the vast majority of the responses that we've gotten is that people feel as though they could have stayed longer. They lose all sense of time as they're experiencing it. And that's, you know, that I think that's a testament to the greatness of the book, because we really put them in the author's hands. But, you know, some of the other more particular responses that we've gotten, a lot of times people are surprised, startled, and maybe once in a while a little put off by the humor that we bring to it. And I think that's partly because people experience literature in a very different way when it's when they're reading it silently to themselves. And F. Scott Fitzgerald had an incredible sense of humor himself, and that humor jumps off the page when you speak it aloud. I think a lot of things change when you speak the language aloud. So sometimes people are going like, wow, I didn't realize it was so funny. But, you know, there's only so much credit we can take for that. There's a certain kind of ironic distance that you know, people experience in the way we do it, because, you know, it's worth mentioning that the play is not set in a glitzy 1920s mansion populated by flappers.
Yes, indeed. I thought we should probably explain a little bit. And that's not just a novel reading. There's a conceit that goes with it. Could you just give us a taste of that?
Sure. So when we first decided we were going to have to do the whole, we were going to try to make ourselves do every word of the novel, we had to figure out how we were going to justify hearing, for example, the first few pages, which are not very dramatic. And, you know, we needed a framing device. We knew that very early on, and that we didn't want to just, you know, try to make a period piece. So we were sitting in a little office above a theater, and we said, let's see how this room would work if it were the set for the show. And that was another part of the experiment. We decided we would set it in a sort of, you know, grungy, slightly timeless back office from maybe sometime in the 80s or 90s. It's sort of a ambiguous and anonymous sort of space. A guy walks in, sits down at his computer, and he can't get it to work. And he finds a copy of The Great Gatsby in his desk. And he just, because he gives up on his computer, he just starts reading, and he's reading aloud. And his office mates come and go and at first kind of ignore him, or maybe they're a little annoyed by him and his reading, but they're putting away files and typing up letters and talking on the phone. And eventually, all these other people begin to also populate the story. Suddenly, someone else is speaking the lines of dialogue attributed to Tom Buchanan or to Gatsby, and it's revealed as we go on that those people in that office are actually becoming the characters from the book. But the backdrop never changes. Lots of lighting and sound changes. Some costumes do appear at times. Liquor bottles suddenly appear out of file cabinets. And it does begin to embody the spirit of the book without giving you a very predictable period look, let's say.
And John, obviously being involved in this work is a massive undertaking, particularly for the performers. The cast that's appearing in Adelaide, are there members from the original cast back in 2010?
Absolutely, yes. And, you know, even those who are not, who did not perform in 2010, many of them, I would say most of them, have been performing in different incarnations of the show since, you know, 2012, I think. So these are everyone who's on it, with one exception, everyone who's on stage has performed this many, many times. You know, for example, you know, our Tom Buchanan has been playing that role since 2008, because the show toured a lot before it premiered in New York the first time, had its official premiere. Scott has been doing it since we first started tinkering with it in 1999.
And he literally can recite The Great Gatsby start to finish.
He can. That's right. Yeah. He accidentally memorized it. And that's exactly what happened.
That's a hell of a party trick if you're going to a very long party.
Oh, yeah. Well, we like to do a game we call Stump the Freak, where people can take the copy of the book and find a sentence and read the first two or three words of the sentence, and Scott will finish it for you, no matter where it is in the book. There's one cast member who will be new to us this time, and we're excited to have him join us, but it's a sort of bittersweet occasion. For many years, going back to 2005, there's a character that appears at the end of the book. It's Gatsby's father, who has come to collect his son's body after him. Spoiler alert, there's a tragic end for Gatsby. And that role has always been played by the real father of the man who plays Gatsby for 20-something years now. Now, we've all gotten a lot older as we've been doing this, and Jim's dad, Ross, has also gotten a lot older, and he's 90 now, and was unable to make the trip for health reasons to Adelaide. So something that we're always excited to do, which is to add a new member to our ensemble, we're going to be doing in Adelaide with a local actor who will step into that role, named Terry Crawford, who we're very excited to work with.
John, I also noticed that the associate director of the original production was Steve Bodo, who was also the head writer at The Daily Show with Jon Stewart for many, many years. How does that connection come about, and did that help with the comedy that you talked about in the Great Gatsby?
Well, I mean, Steve is one of the founding members of the company. So his work with us predates his work with The Daily Show by at least a decade. And in fact, he kind of moved on from working with us regularly to take the job at The Daily Show. But Steve made incredible contributions as a writer and as a comedy thinker to ERS. And I think the company is really bonded over a shared sense of humor. And I think that, you know, having Steve Bodo as one of our, you know, founding members and who did so much work helping to create Gats was a tremendous advantage to us, and in his sense of humor and his intelligence, all of which he took to The Daily Show, where he was not only head writer, but he was executive producer before he left. So yeah, and we've enjoyed, I mean, even the costume designer for Gats was a writer at The Daily Show for a little while. We've got a wonderful set of connections to that show and all those great people who make it.
Well, it does sound like an absolutely extraordinary production. I'm based in Sydney. Gats is playing in Adelaide. It is a 14-hour drive, but I think it would be worth the 14-hour drive to see the 8.5-hour play. John Collins, thank you so much for joining us on Sunday Extra.
It was my pleasure. Thank you.
And that's John Collins, who's the founder of the Elevator Repair Service Theatre Company from America, which is performing Gats at the Adelaide Festival from the 13th to the 15th of March. And John's also giving the 16th Rex Cramphorn Memorial Lecture about the genesis of Gats after the show.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.